goede mensen vind je razendsnel op Temper. Plaats je shift op het platform en kies zelf uit duizenden freelance professionals op basis van hun ratings en skills. Van 1 tot 100 man, voor 1 shift of regelmatig, je vindt ze op Temper. Al vanaf 18,90 per uur. Temper, shift your workforce.
Dit is een BNR-podcast.
My name is Pekka Kallioniemi. I'm a Finnish expert on social media and disinformation. I study especially Russian or Kremlin propaganda and how it spreads online. I have a project called Vatnik Soup, which focuses on pro-Kremlin narratives and people who spread them online.
142,000 followers on Twitter. Well, X, formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a wild ride. It was a big surprise how fast it grew, and I'm really happy about it. But it also kind of tells me that it's considered an important project. So it really motivates me, this kind of following, of course.
Why is it so important to see all these people following you on Vatnik Soup?
Because pro-Kremlin propaganda is everywhere. If you go online, it's everywhere. We had a good chat with disinformation expert Jakub Kalensky just a week ago, and he said that there was a study that showed 60% of all information aggression online is coming from Russia. And another, I think it was 2018 study, showed that in Europe this number is over 80%. So it's crazy how big the disinformation and propaganda machinery is in Russia, and especially with their online operations.
But for a lot of people, it's mainly abstract.
It is. It's basically the mechanism. I mean, we can go back all the way to KGB days when there was discussion about information operations and how they can be used in a long-term way to affect communities and societies by slowly nudging people towards, for example, political extremes. Or radicalize people or drive them to conspiracy theories and so on. But it's we don't really see it because it's often this kind of subconscious process that's slowly nudging us towards an idea usually towards various ideas or conspiracy theories. And it makes it a bit it feels abstract because it is abstract.
Would you say that Russia is at war with us, but we're not noticing it?
Yes, definitely. Has been for a long time. I mean, very aggressively since, if we talk about information warfare, it's been going on for at least since 2012, 2013.
Yeah, I noticed that when the aircraft of MH17 was downed in 2014, there was a lot of propaganda. There was a lot of disinformation, a lot of unknowing about the truth. And you might meet Frans Timmermans tonight, who was Minister of Foreign Affairs back then. And it must be really hard also for politicians and leaders to know if you can blame a state actor for that. In the end, the court was saying it all goes back to Russia, but it took a while.
It takes a long time. And that's also, it's a problem because the Kremlin wants to set the agenda fast. So if there's a big event, you take Nord Stream sabotage, you take the downshooting of MH17, they will throw out a lot of different stories. Like for MH17, they said, okay, there were only corpses inside the plane, or it was shot down by a Ukrainian fighter jet. For the Skripal poisoning in London in 2018, they had 27 different stories coming out in the first 24 hours. So it's crazy. They want to set the agenda because research and investigation will always come later. It's like legislation on social media. It will always take a long time for this to set in. So you have plenty of time to set the agenda because usually the first big explanation that comes in, it kind of sticks. A lot of people believe, for example, that the Nord Stream was blown up by the CIA or the US because it was basically the first story big story, but it was of course it was a bullshit story coming from Seymour Hersh, and that's basically the main narrative still that it.
He
was.
Had one source.
Exactly, and the funny thing about Seymour Hersh is that he's used English phrases that didn't exist anymore, but when you translate them to Russian, it makes sense. So there is this, I think it's called poor wife in his underwear or something, and mm-hmm. it translates perfectly to Russian, but it doesn't make any sense in English.
So okay.
It's kind of interesting. So where is the information coming from to Seymour Hersh?
But if this isn't an example, right? So if he is setting the agenda by publishing this story, does it make him automatically a puppet from the Kremlin?
Not necessarily. I mean,
he could be stupid.
Yeah, there is this phrase or a term called the useful idiot. I don't like the word idiot there because these people are not often idiots. But I mean, they are exploited. They can be exploited. I mean, there are probably a lot of journalists who would like to break big stories like, okay, who blew up the Nord Stream pipe? And if you are fed this information about a crazy, sounds like a Tom Clancy book story, and then you publish it, you become quite famous. And I mean, maybe Seymour Hersh has this need to be still relative in a way.
Is that why you are using the word Vatnik?
For me, Vatnik is a person who spreads and or supports the Kremlin narratives. So they might not even believe these stories, but they still do it for some reason. The motivation could be anything. It could be money. It could be kompromat, for example. They could be blackmailed. It's perfectly possible. It's a very old KGB strategy that they've applied for decades.
Yeah. One more thing about Vatnik soup, because on a daily basis, this is the phrase you're using. You're introducing people to the media, to this platform of X, of Twitter. For example, Elon Musk, but also you were introducing Geert Wilders. I think even Thierry Baudet. I think so.
Yeah.
Can you explain to us why are you introducing, between the breaks, these people to the audience in Vatnik soup?
I try to take the shade away. I think the whole disinformation machinery from the Kremlin is considered to be a huge black box. We don't really know much about it. So I try to kind of shade a little bit light on it. Like, who are these people? What motivates them? Why are they doing what they are doing? And how did they get to the point where they are now? So a lot of them are radicalized by conspiracy theories. For example, COVID-19 was a big radicalizing event. So there's still a lot of conspiracy theories. And I think Thierry von Baudet, sorry if I slaughtered the Dutch names, but Thierry von Baudet, he published a book on, I think, on COVID-19, conspiracies and vaccines. So often conspiracy theories are connected to pro-Kremlin narratives. So if we look at, for example, anti-Semitism is mm-hmm. pretty big thing right now all over the world. But I mean, in Russia, it already in 1906, they published a fake book called Protocols of the Elders of the Zion.
Which in the time of the pogroms?
Yeah, exactly. So it talked about global Jewish elite taking over the world and enslaving all the normal people or enslaving people in general, population, society. So it's not a new thing. They just rebranded as something else. So now this basically is World Economic Forum or the Great Reset. It's basically the same conspiracy theory going back over 100 years, but it's just repackaged.
But if you are exposing people like Elon Musk or Geert Wilders or Thierry Baudet, from a journalist perspective, do you have a smoking gun that they are guilty?
It depends on the person. I mean, for some we do. For some we have evidence of, for example, payments, but not much. To be honest, it's very difficult to, like I said, it's a black box. We don't know much about the money flows or how people get paid, if they get paid. It's possible to spread propaganda and disinformation As we talked about useful idiots, without you knowing it even. Or maybe your motivation is your ego. You want to be known, you want to be noticed. So that could also be a motivator for spreading disinformation or propaganda. But I would say that if you look at the big picture, we don't have a smoking gun. But that's why we need to do more research, more investigation. And I think we need to do a more analytical approach on the problem as a whole, rather than just trying to find if one individual is being paid.
So in your case, your analytic tool, you're not looking, well, if there would be a receipt of this payment from the Kremlin, it would be nice. It would be a great example of how it works. But you are more into mapping, networking, looking at connections. How do you work?
That's basically what I do. I try to get the big picture. I try to get the scope of the problem. Unfortunately, these days, social media is not very, it doesn't really allow large scale analytical work. So it's very difficult to get enough data to make good conclusions on, for example, on X. So if you want to get it, you have to pay Elon $2 million a year. So that's basically, you get the full access to the API and you can get all the data you want or you need. He's made it almost impossible for academics to work on. But so this is why you often have to focus on individuals, what motivates them, and kind of then creating a big picture out of that. So if you go to our website, vanniksoup.com, I think there's 270 entries now. Some of them, most of them are about individuals, but there's also narratives and also networks and also like different phenomena that are related to spreading disinformation and propaganda. And it's not everything is even related to that. So it's generally, I also write about Ukraine, I write about Russian society, this kind of stuff.
You have a book coming up?
Yes, it's called Vanniksoup, surprisingly.
It's a brand.
The ultimate guide to understanding and fighting Russian disinformation. It should come out this year. It's going to be a good book, I think.
Is it also useful for us here in the Netherlands? Because you're here for an event tonight. What advice do you have for us in the Netherlands? Are we an interesting target?
Yeah, the Netherlands is very important target for Russia, because there's a lot of, for example, there's a lot of, first of all, a lot of military aid going from the Netherlands to Ukraine, to help Ukraine. Also, politically, you are in an interesting state, because, for example, you have Geert Wilders who got a landslide result in the election. So and also you have important ports like Rotterdam, and that's why we, for example, in this tonight's events, we will talk about active measures. So it's more like hybrid operations rather than just what's happening online, because there's also a lot of the history shows that there's been GRU spies. So right after MH17 was shut down, plenty of Russian GRU spies came to the Netherlands, and who knows what they did. Also, already back in 2000, between 2009 and 2012, there was this incident of Dutch official giving out documents, so classic espionage case, giving out documents to Russia. You have a lot of so-called alternative media. Is it Anderek? What's the name of Bonanza Media, for example, mm-hmm. is one of those. So they create a lot of online disinformation. There's quite a few prominent figures, also pro-Kremlin, Sonja van den Ende, Thirwan Baude. John Laughland is also associated with all this. So it's not the biggest hotspot in Europe, but there's a lot of active measures, Russian active measures going on in the Netherlands. It's definitely a target for Russian hybrid operations and online operations too.
Maybe my question is too open, but how vulnerable are we in the Netherlands? because you're naming these examples part of Rotterdam, and I see on Russian TV propaganda with, I think Olga Skabeva is all the time saying, oh, we should bomb Rotterdam. It's not going to happen.
Of course not. I mean,
what does it mean in hybrid warfare?
I think it means different approaches. It's the Russia loves to use what's so-called soft power. So they try to approach politicians and give them ideas and provide this kind of friendship between Russia and the countries where they do these operations. Also, they do a lot of aggressive online operations. There's a lot of fake news websites and YouTube shows and so on that focus on bringing out the pro-Kremlin viewpoints. But I would say that what politicians, they don't want to hear this, but what helps the best against Russian bullshit is education, is media literacy, critical thinking. These need to be adopted into the curriculum of every student. I mean, in Finland, we started at the very early age. Even in preschool, we are thought like, what are the consequences of lying? Why is lying bad, and what can it lead to, and so on? And then it goes throughout the whole school system. It's like you have to think critically, and you have to be media literate. And it's for that reason, Finnish people are not very good at saying nice things about their country, but that's, I'm going to say nice thing about Finland is that we are very resilient to Russian propaganda. Extremely resilient, I would say. Probably the best country in that sense.
And the Netherlands aren't?
You are not the best because Finland is the best, but I mean, I would say that you probably are in the top 10. But still, there's a lot that could be done in terms of education and I mean, education is the key. I don't condone censorship. I think censorship is bad. I mean, even banning RT or Sputnik in Europe it's just a weapon that we give to Russia. Okay, so they can say that we censor, but I don't think it doesn't matter if RT is publishing their bullshit if people don't believe in that. Mm-hmm. You need the resilience rather than the censorship.
You're referring now to politicians, but you were also mentioning Geert Wilders, and from that perspective, Geert Wilders might be on board in the next government. So I don't know if there's going to be extra education.
I don't want to meddle with the Dutch politics. I mean, that's...
No, but we see it in Slovakia. We see it in other European countries as well, in Hungary. We're not sure what we see in Italy right now, because Meloni is also a little bit like a wolf in sheep clothes, but it's all over Europe.
It is. Belgium. Belgium also. Many kind of France is... So, it's tricky. But if you look at Slovakia, the people didn't vote for Robert Fico because he's pro-Kremlin, because they voted because they want change. They want something to change, and it's just, I would imagine that it's the same with Wilders. They want something to change. They see problems in a society. So I think another thing that makes countries very resilient against Russian bullshit is to make the best society you can make. So just be transparent about things and try to resolve problems that come up. So because once you create this kind of low trust environment in a society, people don't trust the authorities, they don't trust the politicians, they don't trust, police, then you have problems. Then it's very very easy to sell propaganda because you don't trust the decision makers or policy makers. So creating this high trust environment is also a very crucial thing. And it's also something that actually is quite high in Finland. And for example, in Finland, I think it's 84% of people are ready to defend their country. I think that number in the Netherlands, it could have been as low as, I think I saw a number 15. I hope I'm not wrong here, but it's a different number. It's a whole different number.
And you were mentioning that in Finland, there is a great awareness of Russian online threats as well. And do you see the combination with willing to defend your country with online propaganda and being resilient in that case?
Yeah, of course, it's a war. As we mentioned, it's an information war, and Russia is waging war against the West, and we have to defend ourselves. And right now we are not doing enough. There is not enough. You need money to do this. There's basically not money to do this. As I mentioned, the interview that we did with Jakub Kalenski, he said that basically 10 years ago there was nobody working on this. It was just nobody knew about this, and now we are slowly waking up to the problem, but still not enough is being done.
What would you advise to the Dutch government? Color of the government doesn't matter.
Start education programs that, I mean, you see the results. It will take time, of course, but that's how you build resilience over time. Media literacy, critical thinking, but also create campaigns, maybe put money on and research on what are the main narratives, who are the information aggressors, or is it the CCP, the Communist Chinese Communist Party, or is it Iran? Is it Russia? Is it the United States? Of course, it could come from any country. But make good analysis of the situation and then come up with a solution. But I mean, I would start with the education rather than, for example, censorship.
European elections are coming up. What can we do on the short term?
So, for example, what we are doing, we are creating a list of candidates who are supporting Ukraine. I'm extremely biased in that sense. I support Ukraine. So who support any military aid or economic assistance to Ukraine, or people who understand the problem. Our goal is to create a list of candidates who understand the problem rather than ignore it or don't understand it. So we could actually have some people in the European Parliament who understand the scale of the scope of the problem or the scale of the problem, and maybe even have some answers on how to fight against it.
But your answer also kind of underlines that because the European elections are in like 10 weeks, 11 weeks time, so we'll still be vulnerable and there will still be pro-Kremlin puppets, useful idiots, vatniks, whatever in the European Parliament.
There will always be. There will always be, but they'll be in the marginal. Like, they are already in the marginal. There's some Irish MEPs. Latvian MEP turned out to be actually a Russian spy. But they'll always be in the marginal, but Russia will make sure that they are heard in the online world. They will amplify these messages, but there'll always be, there's always gonna be like maybe 10 people who are pro-Kremlin. But I mean, does it really matter other than in online propaganda? Not really. They don't really have the power to do much there. Each society will always have a marginal. It's impossible. I mean, we cannot bring societies into this level of resilience where everybody's in unison saying the same things and not like, oh, everybody's resisting, for example, Kremlin. But I think what we can do is we can increase resistance to their message. That's basically what we need to do.
Two more questions. First one, you were mentioning at the beginning of our conversation that the Kremlin is really good in setting the agenda, not allowing other stories to appear, creating a lot of fuzz in the first 24 hours of an accident, for instance. How much time does it take for a country like the Netherlands to set the agenda? Because it's such a system that has been created by Russia to influence us. How many years does it take to set the narrative, to set the agenda?
How long did it take for MH17? It took maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe even more. I think it took longer. It takes time. That's why it's a symmetrical war. It's because Russia can always lie. They don't have problem with lying, but we have this idea of, okay, the truth needs to be told. So we need investigations. We need investigative journalism. And I personally, I feel like, of course, this is the way to go. This is the way it should be in a free and democratic society. You need to actually investigate before. But Russia will always have this kind of weapon against the West because it's asymmetrical. They can lie and they will not... they will never be held accountable for those lies. They will forever they will forever tell the story that MH17 was shot down by a Ukrainian jet or it was full of corpses. They will always tell the same story over and over again, even though the evidence piles up eventually. But
so are you also saying it's harder when you're a democratic country?
Yes, it is, because you need to focus on the truth. That's basically the approach, and it's also what makes the many Western countries so great. It provides us freedom and it provides us accountability in a sense. Whereas authoritarian regimes, they can set their own truth, so-called truth. But I mean, I would choose democratic freedom any day over authoritarian regime and lies.
Final question tonight. It's going to be really interesting also with the director of the Dutch Military Intelligence and Security Service, maybe Frans Timmermans. We're not sure about his agenda yet. And a former Russia correspondent, Eva. She's really good. She'll be there as well. If you're mentioning tonight what the situation is like in the Netherlands nowadays, and you have to mention one weak spot, what's our weakest spot? And is that weakest spot comparable to the weakest spot of other Western European countries?
That's a good question. I think what the Kremlin is now utilizing the most, the heaviest in the Netherlands, is immigration. So I would imagine that there are people who are relatively unhappy about the current situation. So you need a political resolution for that that satisfies most people. But I mean, that's what the Kremlin usually does. They take big polarizing issues and then they try to divide societies based on those. You have the farmer protests, which I think started in the Netherlands. Then you have the immigration. So they will always utilize. So I think these need a good political resolution. As I said, high trust society, build a high trust society, build the best society in the world, and you'll be much more resilient against any bullshit coming from a foreign state.
Yeah, but to follow up, the discussions about farmers and migrants, they'll be there. They'll stay.
Of course.
The Kremlin are feeding the discussion because they want us to polarize, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, we should bring up a solution for the Dutch people, for the farmers, for the migrants. But the Kremlin doesn't want a solution. They want us to keep on debating.
It comes back to the education. So if people understand that there's incoming foreign influence, then they understand that most of the discussion online is actually, it's not real. It's fabricated. It's formulated in countries like the troll farms in Nigeria or Ghana or St. Petersburg or Moscow or whatever. It could be Israel. It could be Philippines, Indonesia. I mean, if people are aware of the scale and scope of this information operations, they are much less effective.
Yeah.
So again, education.
Yeah, yeah. And if we can somehow expose someone who is pro-Russian and feeding these discussions, then it could also set another narrative, right?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. I already had my two last questions, but maybe good to ask you. Are you also, because you're a researcher, are you also advising NGOs, governments, companies regarding these topics?
Not really, other than social media. I mean, I have a lot of people, followers who are politicians, policymakers, journalists, people from the military. I am in a, I don't know what to call it, it's called Finnish Defense Forces has this symposium of people of cognitive resilience. So I'm part of this kind of, I guess it's a think tank maybe, but I advise the Finnish government on this type of stuff. But I mean, that's basically, I would say that most of my work comes through Vatnik Soup.
Can we mention that you are sometimes somehow advising Stratcom, NATO?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Maybe you can mention it.
So, yeah, my background is in research. I'm a researcher, so NATO, we conducted research on for NATO Stratcom in Riga, Latvia, about how and if Chinese Communist Party amplified Russian propaganda on NATO membership for Finland and Sweden. And this was published February last month, this paper. And I mean, I do research also. I love research. Basically, Vatnik Soup is also research, but it's not in the most classic sense. So, yeah, I think... I'll probably still do research for various NGOs or organizations in the future, but my focus will still be on I would say, popularizing information operations and pro-Kremlin propaganda on social media. So I call myself a geopolitical social media influencer. I don't know if it's a new term or old term, but... That's me.
You can set the narrative.
Exactly.
Thank you for your time, Pekka.
Thank you.
Enjoy the Netherlands and good luck with all your research.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
Mensen vind je razendsnel op Temper. Plaats je shift op het platform en kies zelf uit duizenden freelance professionals op basis van hun ratings en skills. Van 1 tot 100 man, voor één shift of regelmatig, je vindt ze op Temper. Al vanaf 18,90 per uur. Temper, shift your workforce.